The thing that kept coming back to me over this past month was the question, why? Why? And we run into that when we're talking to people who aren't believers. We run into people who have these questions when we are believers and things we go through. Why did the Lord do this? Why is this happening to us? Why did this need to happen? One of the incidents I've been reading about, a friend of mine who was a supplier to my business down in LA says, I can never come to Christ because I can't figure out why a plane full of nuns crashed in China. Why did God have anything to do with that? And I mean, I don't know. There are questions that we all have and about things that happen, and we just don't know why the Lord allows things to happen. But which led me to Job. So Job 1:8. Going to read that. It said, the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. So Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yes, all that a man has he will give for his life, but stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he's in your hands, but spare his life. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And just because I'm curious, what is the exact definition of a boil? A boil is a painful, pus-filled bump that forms under your skin when bacteria infects and inflames one or more of your hair follicles. And he had this going on from head to toe. I mean, unbelievably painful. He took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of ashes. Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and shall not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. The story of Job, the comment on that, the story of Job involved immense personal tragedy, losing his children, his wealth, and health to agonizing sores, all stemming from a divine test orchestrated by God and Satan, yet Job remained faithful. Questioning God, but ultimately finding deeper understanding, this is important, deeper understanding through his inexplicable pain, highlighting themes of undeserved suffering, divine sovereignty, and patient endurance, with God eventually restoring him. So, as Job was going through all this, he had no idea what was happening to him or why it was happening to him. So, we have all had personal experiences and heard stories that make you wonder why. Make you wonder why. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to my friend? Why did this person die? I mean, they were so young. Charlie Kirk, you know, things like this. So, I'm going to bring up a few personal stories because I think personal stories are more impactful than secondhand stories. So, my father was a calibrated Norden bomb sights in World War II. And when these planes would come in from their bombing runs and were all shot up, he would go in and calibrate the bomb sights. And he had to walk into these pretty horrific situations because you couldn't take the bomb sights out of the B-17 bombers in order to get the calibration right again. So a lot of these guys from World War II smoked like chimneys. My dad smoked 3 packs a day, 60 cigarettes a day. I never saw him without a cigarette. And so, being weird, I decided, let's multiply this out. 60 cigarettes a day times, 3,120 a month over 30 years is 94,000 cigarettes. He smoked 94,000. So he didn't die from cancer, believe it or not. In 1978, he started getting ill. We're going, well, what's going on? Goes to the doctor. Doctor can't figure it out. Go to John Muir Hospital in Concord, California. They can't figure it out. go to Merritt Hospital in Oakland. They can't figure it out. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, calls us up. They can't figure it out. Finally, he goes over to Stanford Research Center, and they can't figure it out. And so the whole time, he was sick from May of 78. He passed away November 1st of 78, and nobody knew why he died. Nobody knew why. And this is one of those deals where you're going, you know, Lord, why? Why can't this get figured out? I mean, if they could just figure this out, you know? So these are one of the questions that come up in our lives in different circumstances where we're saying, I just have to trust the Lord. I just have to believe that for some reason this transpired the way it transpired, and I just have to trust God because I know He is good. I know He is good. So, I had childhood friends. Now, all this gets down to why this seemingly we don't have answers for things. So, childhood friends. I had four childhood friends die from disease. You know, very young, 7, 8 years old. Like, where's Kevin? You know, where's Linda? Where's, you know, where's Pamela? You know, they don't show up anymore. Well, they passed away. What? You know, 7, 8 years old. Really? And high school, two girls were murdered. This was down in the Bay Area. We think one of them was by the Zodiac Killer. This was back in the late 60s. And this year, we have had my wife's cousin's husband pass away. He was just backing his car up, hit an embankment, the car flipped over, killed him. You know, and we're going, why? And these are things. There are so many things that go on where we don't have the answers. Why did God allow this to happen? Why this? Why that? But we don't know. And we won't know until we come to see Him and we ask Him, if you're not overwhelmed by His glory and His love for you, to collect yourself enough to ask Him, you know, why, you know. So, question was, why does God heal some people but not others? I know people that have been healed from cancer. I know a number of people that have been healed from cancer. And, you know, why some? I know people who were coming over to my house saying, hey, can you pray for me? And one was kind of cute. It was Easter. She goes, I think God will heal me better on Easter than He would at any other time. So, anyway, we prayed with her, and she passed away, what, a year ago last March, I think it was. Anyway, I kind of look at it as a rock in a pond. You know, when you throw a rock in a pond, you're very aware of the impact of the rock in the pond. And when circumstances in your life happen, it's the initial impact that really impacts, excuse the pun, people. But the ripple effect and how it affects everything around is something that only God understands and God orchestrates. So anyway, without going through a list of other people, and we hear the answers, you know. Well, it's a fallen world. Well, we have fallen bodies. And well, it's sinful people. And all these things are true. All these things are true. And we don't know exactly why things transpire the way they do. So the first series of comments here is why, and we don't have the answers. We'll only know the answers if we choose to ask Him when we see Him. But it still gets down to trust. We trust God is in control. He's never out of control. So the second part of this, why, number two I put here, sometimes we see the reason for things we go through after a period of time, months, years, and then we realize the wisdom behind the why. We realize that God has orchestrated this whole set of circumstances for our good, and He gives us the clarity and the insight to be able to see how He led us to the certain point that we're at. Case in point with me was that my mother, who wasn't a Christian, which is still trying to figure this one out, she prayed to God that I wouldn't go out for football in eighth grade because, you know, that's what I was planning to do. So we go on a family vacation up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and we meet with some friends up there, and one of the friends' kids and I go out on horseback, and my friend has his own horse, and I have to rent one. Well, rental horses are terrible. They're terrible. So anyway, we're off on these fire trails, and we go off on a gallop, and this horse, we're to gallop pretty quick. He takes a hard right, tries to throw me, is what he's trying to do. I manage to grab onto the horn of the saddle. I lift my arm up like this because he's running me straight into a tree. He rips me right off the saddle. I felt myself hook the tree, spin around, land on the ground, and my arm is completely dislocated. And I'm going, in my sick mind, I'm thinking, I should pretend I'm dead and fake my friend out. And I think, maybe I am dead. So I wasn't able to go out for football, so I ran cross country instead in high school and became pretty good at it. And then I went into high jumping and track, and that's how I wound up coming up to Spokane, Washington, because of a potential track scholarship for high jumping. That never would have happened if that horse hadn't run me into a tree. You know, which sounds like a weird rationalization, but if you were in my position, you'd see exactly how the Lord was leading all this, kind of harshly. So, anyway, let me see here, where am I here? Oh, another thing. When I had the tree service, I had a tree service for about 17 years. And, you know, when things happen, you really don't see the hand of the Lord in it until after the fact. And you go, oh, the Lord did orchestrate all this, even though the initial impact of it was very devastating, supposedly. What happened was that I had a tree service at the time, and a friend of mine and I had a big truck full of wood chips. We were coming up Market Street in Spokane, and two cars in front of me, the guy slams on his brake. The car in front of me slams on his brake. I got 3 tons of wood chips in the back. I slam on my brakes and stop this far away from running over this Volkswagen, you know. But the car in back of me didn't stop. He hit me at 35 miles an hour, wrapped his whole pickup truck underneath the chassis of my truck, completely wiped it out. And I remember standing on the sidewalk, and I'm going, okay, Lord, what is this about? What is this about? Well, it turns out it was a double portion. Not only did we get recompensed for the contract we would have had if our equipment had been working, but we also had everything paid for as far as getting new equipment and everything. Because this guy trashed this truck. I mean, he bent the frame and everything up. So the funny thing is when the officer came and spoke to him, he goes, oh, I was only going 15 miles an hour. And the officer goes, yeah, right. You should have seen the truck. It was horrible. So the Lord took that situation, and not only did we get paid for the downtime, but we were able to go to the contract, which was for Holy Family Cemetery, and do the work too. So we got a double portion out of the whole thing, and initially, like, well, we're just toast for the winter. And we actually got twice as much. And it was just the whole Lord just taking care of things, because winters were always very dicey for us, you know, being a seasonal business, right? So my wife has had cancer twice. She, the first time, it was stage one, and we got through that. Second time, it was stage three and highly aggressive, and this was back in 2020. And the first time, the Lord said, she'll be fine. I go, okay. Second time, the Lord said, trust me. And I was going, that sounds more serious. You know, you wonder, okay, why is she going through this? Well, since she has recovered completely, we've had people we know come up whose wives or others have had cancer, and she has been a tremendous strength to them. And it was very, very similar to, you know, what the Lord said to Peter in Luke 23:32. He said, the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And this is interesting. He says, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. So that's an interesting comment. When you have returned to me. And I'm thinking, this guy went through it, and it took a while. I'm assuming, because of the phrasing here, that it took a while for him to come back to Christ and to come back to his belief and stuff. So I took a look at what happens when Jesus said, he's asked permission to sift you. So I go, okay, let's look at the process of thinning, or what's the word I want? Winnowing and threshing wheat and sifting. So, and I'm thinking, this has happened to me sometimes. This is kind of humorous. It says, after harvest, wheat stalks are beaten to separate kernels from the heads. That's what I felt like at times. The mixture is tossed into the air, and the wind blows away the light chaff, leaving the heavier grain, and then the sifting takes place, and a final pass through a sieve removes dirt, rocks, and remaining debris from the grain before grinding. And I thought it was interesting because Satan asked for Simon just like he did with Job. And I thought, that's interesting. That's interesting because here he is asking to sift Job. God gives him permission. And here, Satan is asking permission from Jesus to sift Peter. So Simon was told he was going to be sifted to strengthen your brethren, which was kind of comforting to know why you're about to go through something, right? Job was not told why. He just went through this, but his response was nothing came from his lips to dishonor God, and he was very, he kept a holy and righteous attitude about it. So the third why, the first time, remember, we see things that we don't understand why God orchestrated something, and we just have to believe. The second time, we see after the fact why God has orchestrated something in our lives, and there's a process that we wind up seeing after the fact and not actually while it's taking place. So the third one is oftentimes we see his hand in our lives right away, so which typically is our miracles, when we're watching them and we're noticing them being manifested to others or to our lives specifically. So I'm going to talk to three different incidents of miracles that I have seen. One, when I started working for Valley Tree Service back in 1975, we were clueless idiots. We didn't know anything. And I didn't know how to hook up anything to a hitch. And we had a stump grinder, which was pretty good size. They're about 1,500 pounds. And we put it on the hitch of the truck, and we're driving down the road, and all of a sudden, I said, "Hey, Bill, what was that?" He goes, "I don't know." We turn around and look, and the stump grinder is gone. And we go, "Oh, no." So we step on the brake. The stump grinder passes us up on the left, and this lady's coming down Broadway, and her eyes are like, And so Bill goes, "What do we do?" I said, "Give it to the Lord." So go, "Lord, it's all yours." great cop out, right? The stump grinder pulls in front of us, goes down right in front of us, and then pulls over to the side. The tongue drops in between the curb and the street, and it comes to a stop. And we're just going, and this poor lady went the other way. I don't know what happened to her, But it was amazing. It was amazing. And we still talk about that. Another one, that was a miracle. Another one was when I had a tree service. Got electrocuted twice with 7,200 volts. And one, I was deadwooding a tree up in South Hill. And as I was coming down the tree, one of the branches, which was a dead branch, dropped onto this little thin line on top between poles. And I thought, well, a little thin line, that couldn't be dangerous, I thought it's got to be that big fat black one down near the bottom. Well, what happened was as I came down the tree, I just thought, well, I'll just flip the dead branch off of the line, and reached over, bam, got three entrance marks in my hand. You heard me yell so loud, the guys doing home remodeling in the house across the street heard me, and they came out, "Are you okay? What's going on?" I said, "Yeah, I just got electrocuted. I'm okay." So that was one time. And the funny thing was, my boss never taught us about line identification. He just walked off before I started doing this work, and he said, "Oh, watch out for the hot stuff." Okay, like I'm supposed to figure this out. I figured, you know, it makes sense that the hot stuff would be in the big fat black cable at the bottom of the thing, but that's not where it is. It's on the top, and it's bare wire. It's not insulated. So anyway, that was a harsh lesson. So the other one was down in Yakima, and I was thinning out a birch tree, and birch trees have that really, really nice bark on them, and you don't wear climbing spurs on a birch tree. So I've got the pole pruner, and I'm clipping it around, and I'm shaping the tree around, and all of a sudden, I'm getting this stinging on my hands and on my arms. I'm thinking, bees, they're the worst when you're 60 feet up in a tree. They're horrible, because you have to keep your cool while you're getting stung, right? Well, these weren't bees. The whole tree got electrified because one of the limbs I'd cut fell onto a primary line, which was that 7,200-volt line, and had electrified the whole tree. Because it was early spring, there was high moisture content in the tree, and the whole thing became electrified. And so I realized what was happening because the stinging was going on with these little leaves touching me, and I see this little plume of smoke coming up over here, and I'm going, oh no. My dad, who was into electricity and built a lot of stuff, he said, if you ever think something's hot, he says, don't touch it like this, because the current will make your hands wrap around it and you'll get electrocuted. He says, if you think something's hot, just touch it with the back and your muscles will contract and you'll pull away. So I'm going, well, I remember Dad said something. And I'm touching my pole saw and I've got all this current just pouring through me. And my lungs are collapsing. I'm screaming, but I'm not trying to. It was getting a little embarrassing. My friend is running the chipper down over here. He can't hear me. And I start going like this to see if I can break the circuit, and I can't do that, so I rotate it out this way, and I broke the circuit. And then I'm thinking, okay, now what? If I step there, I could die. If I step there, I could die. I mean, but I've got to do something. I can't just stand here. So luckily for me, with birch trees, you don't wear spurs, because otherwise I would have been grounded, and that current would have been able to go right through me and kill me. And that was a miracle from the Lord. So that was the second one. I got down out of the tree and called the power company up. They came out and took pictures of me, and it was a little harsh. Anyway, the third miracle, I talked about. Now, this one, I debated whether I should share or not, but I'm going to anyway. My sister got in between a mare and a foal down in Lancaster, California, and she had a horse ranch, and she got in between them, and the horse kicked her, and her stomach slid out of the way and ruptured her pancreas and her spleen. So she asked me if I could come down and help with the horses. I said, well, sure, I'd love to, you know. So I went down there, and my brother-in-law had a really cool car. He had a 68 Chevelle with a 396 in it and a Hurst shifter. And I mean, I was a two-door and I was in hog heaven. That was so fun to drive around. We go up in the San Gabriel Mountains, and there's just one lane this way, one lane this way, an embankment here and an embankment here. So I'm driving right along. This guy on a Harley wipes out in front of me. We're going 50, 55 miles an hour, wipes out in front of me. And I mean, I should have run him over. And all of a sudden, we were on the other side. And I'm going, how did that happen? My brother-in-law looks at me, he goes, what happened? I said, I don't know, but the guy was behind the motorcycle and everything was now behind us. And there was no room to go to the right, there was no room to go to the left because there was oncoming traffic. And he looks at me and I look at him and we're just going, what was that about? What was that about? So I still talk about that, and I'm very hesitant to tell some people about it because they go, oh, you've been smoking. But I wasn't. And a very amazing thing happened. So anyway, that's a true story. True story. I don't know I'd like to expand on that more, but there's nothing left to expand. So anyway, my wife, after I was going through this message with her, she is going to this Bible study fellowship, and she says, you know, you need to really wrap this up in terms of getting a message across to people about the sovereignty of God. He can do what he wants, when he wants, and how he wants to do it. And one of the quotes from her lesson says, God positions his people to accomplish his purposes by his divine providence. God orchestrates the circumstances of life to advance his eternal plan. And I'm going to read a little more from her copy she gave me here, but I've got these things that happen to us when we age, right? Anyway, it says, God's sovereignty harmonizes all his unlimited attributes, such as his power, wisdom, authority, and goodness. He controls and guides all events for his glory and for our good. God does not exercise his sovereignty arbitrarily, but works in ways we cannot fully understand to accomplish his perfect will. Our limited human insight cannot fully comprehend how God works in individual lives and human history. As sinful humans, we seek to control our lives in ways we cannot ultimately understand. We come up short when our energy and wisdom inevitably wane. Life feels random if we fail to recognize the working of a good and sovereign God behind the twists and turns of our lives and human history. Without acknowledging a powerful God behind it all, we flounder in uncertainty and purposelessness. The truth of God's sovereignty provides stabilizing context for our lives and eternity. With God firmly on his throne, we can rest within his higher ways when our understanding falls short. We can yield our need for control and trust God's actual authority. We can face calamity, trusting that God will bring an outcome that advances his purposes. Knowing God rules his universe with infinite wisdom and impeccable timing allows us to find peace in this world while we wait for Christ's return. No enemy can overturn what God ordains. How will you trust God when you face impossible odds or crippling uncertainty? In what specific situation will you find comfort in God's sovereignty today? And my phrase for that is, we kind of live in a giant puzzle. I have a 6,000-piece puzzle we made down out of our office because we had some slack time, but there are some out there that are like 20, 30, 40,000-piece puzzles. So it kind of reminded me of not understanding what God is doing in our lives because we can't see the whole picture, right? We don't need to see the whole picture. We just need to be thankful that we can be a part of it. And that's my message. So I'm glad you're still here. So anyway, let's close in prayer. And Father, we thank you for your word. Thank you for your sovereignty. And thank you for being so involved with us, Lord, that we're able to trust, even though we don't understand, because you're so faithful to us. And we just continue to ask, Lord, that through the circumstances that you orchestrate for our lives, that the ultimate goal, Lord, is for us to become more like you, to learn you in deeper ways. And we just lift ourselves up to you to be the author and perfecter of our faith. And we just thank you for what you do in our lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So, as Forrest Gump said, that's all I have to say about that.